503-733-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. Friday edition of It's Your Turn. You know, I had a panic moment there. I thought it wasn't Friday for a second. Wow. I'm glad it is. We have a bunch of guests to chat with today. Nice to have you with us on the program again, as always. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about, this is an interesting program, and I'm not sure how long it's been around. I know they did it last year. It's a program under which qualified individuals can get free dental work. And it's tomorrow. It's called Dentistry from the Heart. We'll have some guests with us from Keelan Dental here in Butler. Also, this is Preakness Weekend for horse lovers. You know what that is, right? It's the second jewel of Thoroughbred Racing's Triple Crown, the Preakness. It's tomorrow in Baltimore. We're going to talk about horses on the last segment of the program today. Bill Bercuri, who's a horse owner and trainer from our area, will be here. He's with the Meadows Standard Bred Owners Association. So I'm not very knowledgeable about horses and horse racing, so I look forward to chatting with him a little bit later on the program. But our first guest sitting right here in the studio with me is the director of VA Butler Healthcare, and we welcome David Cord back to the program. Director Cord, good to see you.
It's nice to see you again. Thanks.
You have a smile on your face because we are getting closer and closer to the opening of the new VA Healthcare Center. In fact, the dates are now set, right, for the opening and the open house and all that stuff?
That is correct. Uh-huh. We'll do the ribbon cutting on August 29th at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then we will officially open for business Tuesday, September 5th.
Mm-hmm. Are you beginning to move in yet or move equipment in yet?
Well, some of the equipment has been going in throughout the construction process. Mm-hmm. We're just a couple weeks away from officially taking over occupancy of the building, and so then we'll use some of the weeks here over the summer to get the rest of the equipment in place, get our IT equipment in place and running, supplies, materials, familiarize staff with the building.
Hey, you have to have kind of a, well, in Navy terminology, it would be kind of a shakedown cruise, huh?
Exactly. We've got a lot of staff who haven't had the opportunity yet since it was an active construction site, haven't been able to get into the building. So we will, in stages throughout June and July, take different program areas from the facility over as they're activating their particular areas of the building, make sure they've got all the equipment and supplies they need, make sure they're familiar with their new surroundings so that when we're open for business on September 5th, it will be a seamless transition for the veterans.
I hadn't thought about, you mentioned getting all of your IT stuff in there. Internet technology, and I, as soon as you said it, I thought, "Wow, yes," because the delivery of healthcare today and the delivery of medicine is so dependent on. I mean, go into any hospital room, physician's office, nurse's office. There's all kind of TV screens in there now, and computer hookups, and online stuff, and all that.
There's virtually nothing in healthcare now that doesn't operate off of IT,
including the patient records, right?
Well, absolutely. In fact, you know, the VA really pioneered the electronic medical record decades ago, and so we're very dependent on technology across the board. So the trick is getting all of the new stuff ready to go in the new building, and at the same time, we've got to maintain everything in the current facility because we will remain open for business in the current facility right up till Friday afternoon before the weekend, before going into Labor Day weekend. So there's not going to be any break in service, any cancellation of clinics. We will close the doors Friday at the end of business day at the current facility, and then we'll open the following Tuesday for business in the new facility.
You know, that's kind of convenient to have a long holiday weekend in there because it gives you a full extra day for transitioning.
It does, and we sort of took advantage of that in timing out when we would do all of these things. It was a little bit of a benefit to have that third day because while a lot of what's going into the new HCC is new equipment and new materials, there are things, particularly from offices and whatnot, that have to be moved into the new space. And so really we're using that three-day weekend to get those last items moved out of the old facility and into the new facility. So it'll be a busy three-day weekend.
I have followed some school construction over the years and some other areas. The county has built a couple of office buildings in the past couple of decades. There always seem to be a few cost overruns or something that seems to go wrong. Have there been any major problems with this new facility, this new medical facility?
No, there really hasn't. They ended up, by the time we take possession here in a few weeks, the project will have been about 5 months ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. Budget's been maintained throughout. Of course, we're renting over a 20-year period, and so the rental costs were fixed going into this. It's really been, in my years in the VA, this is the smoothest construction project I've ever been a part of, and I've worked at six different facilities.
That is unusual, and sometimes it's not major, although I recall on the County Government Center annex, they discovered almost at the end of the project that the roof was crooked. Sometimes it's pretty significant, but in any project of that size, multi-million dollar project, that's astonishing that it went so smoothly.
It really is. I think one of the things that helped was this developer, Cambridge, one of the techniques that they use, and this was new to me, but they would have regular partnering meetings throughout the process. Every couple months, we would bring everybody together for a day to include the contractors, the architects, engineers, subcontractors, the developers, and then representatives from my staff, and we'd spend a day together just talking over, what milestones we hit over the past few months, what we're still targeting for the next part of the construction, what the overall targets were for the project. And it was very refreshing to actually get all of the parties into a room and do that on a regular basis to just talk about how the project was going. I've not been a party to something like that before, and I have to say I think it was a big contributing factor to things going as smoothly as it did.
Mm-hmm. And Cambridge developers have built other facilities in the past, so it's not their first time at the rodeo.
It is not, and I think they have more projects on the horizon, both in the private sector and with the VA. But no, clearly they're well schooled in how to do this well, and it showed. It was actually a project that was delightful to be part of, and that doesn't often happen when it comes to construction.
Yeah, it's true. I dug out in advance of your visit today. This was a postcard. Let me see if there's a date on here. It was something to do with there was a media day or maybe announcement of the plans or something like that a couple of years back. And anyway, there was a rendering of the new building, and I held it up and said, well, did it turn out? Does it look this nice as it did in the rendering, the architectural rendering?
I would say it looks probably nicer when you see it in person, but it's impressive how close it is to that rendering from several years ago. And it's when you're inside and you're walking through, you get a real appreciation of the scope of the building when you're walking through. You also get a great appreciation for just how well thought out and how well designed this is going to be from a veteran user standpoint.
I had thought that this was from groundbreaking. Actually, it was from the topping out ceremony.
Okay.
I put the last girder
beam
in or whatever.
Yes.
It was. Yeah. Well, anyway, and I was sharing with you just before we went on the air today, I was coming along Benbrook Road last week shortly before sunset. I don't usually travel on that road, and I was coming from Route 8 North, and I was headed toward Moraine Plaza, which is why I cut off on Benbrook there. And off in the distance, suddenly I come over a hill, and I saw this building. As I said, it was just before sunset that the lights in the parking lot were on, and it took me a couple of seconds before I realized what it was, because it was a couple of miles away. It was the back of the new VA Healthcare Center, which I'd never seen it from that angle.
I have not, so now I have to go do that.
Oh, it's nice.
Now that you said that, I'm going to have to make that drive at sunset now and check that out myself.
Yeah. Well, you have to go up to the Pioneer Drive-In and get on that Brook there and then start back down the other direction where you won't see it. But it's really nice. And like I say, a couple of seconds went by and then it dawned on me what I was looking at. It was very nice. So, wow, that's pretty exciting to know that we're this close now to get... You know, because I don't have to tell the listeners here. This project was, man, it was in limbo for a long, long time, and we didn't even know whether they're going to get it built.
I know it's been a long haul for the veterans and for our staff. I certainly appreciate everybody's patience with this, and it's very exciting that we're this close now. And it's there's an energy with our staff now that we're actually starting the activation phase and familiarizing people. I continue to have regular town hall meetings with members of the community, and I can tell that the veterans are very excited to get in to see the new space. Mm-hmm. And actually, the way we schedule appointments, and we're so far out in the future with getting people returned for appointments, we're at the point now where we're going to be scheduling appointments for the new building.
Oh.
People who are here now and they need a follow-up appointment, say in 3 or 4 months, we're at that point now where we're going to be scheduling their appointment for the new facility.
We're chatting, for our listeners who may have joined us a little bit late on the program, we're chatting with the director, David Cord. He's the director, top administrator at the VA Butler Healthcare, and the excitement is really building now for the opening of the new facility. You have something coming up, I believe it's next week. I just got a news release on this within the past day or so, called the Million Veteran Program to visit VA Butler Healthcare. Can you fill us in on this, Director Cord?
Sure. This is a program that's been in place now for several years. It's actually a program I've participated in. The goal was to get 1 million veterans in our system who would agree to participate in genomic research project. So we're building a genomic database through using our veteran population. And so we will have a mobile unit that will come up to the facility. We're going to do that on May 23rd. They'll be there most of the day, 8:30 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon.
It's next Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it's an opportunity for veterans who want to participate to provide a blood sample. And we're using this as an opportunity, like I said, to build the largest genomic database for medical research. If you read about the future of medicine, it's moving in that direction where, for example, instead of giving a particular medication to a patient that's a standard dose, based on maybe what your body weight is, for example, it can be further refined in the future to based on what your genetic makeup might be and how that particular drug may interact with your genetic makeup, that there's going to be, that fine of a process in medicine, in tailoring medicine to us individually. So this project started years ago. There's already 500,000 veterans who have participated in the project. I've done it myself. I did it several years ago when I worked at the Pittsburgh VA, and the goal is to build a database of 1 million veterans.
And up to this point, according to the Veterans Administration, there have been nearly 10,000 veterans in western Pennsylvania alone who have signed on to be part of the program.
Absolutely. It's western Pennsylvania's got a great veteran population, one of the largest in the country, and have been great in participating in this program. So the group comes up here every few months. We host them. They bring their van up for the day. And so I would encourage any veterans who haven't yet participated and would like to, this is it's a great way for, I think, the veterans to assist with medical development and medical research.
I'm assuming they just draw a small sample, right?
I mean, yes.
Not like a pint of blood or
anything. Actually, now that I think about it, it may have also been a cheek swab. So I have to, it may not even be a blood sample. It may have just been a cheek swab.
When you think about the advancement in the study of genes, the human gene, and they've been building these genetic databases now for some time. It's amazing. I can remember when I In my AP biology class, when we studied genes, you had a couple of pages about fruit flies. the other thing that I remember is, you know, if your mother had blue eyes and your father had brown eyes, what are the odds of you having blue eyes? And that was about all we knew about genes back in those days. Now, who would believe it? You see the commercials on TV. You can, you know, take a Q-tip, swab the inside of your cheek, send it in, and they'll tell you what your ancestry is, for goodness sakes. They mail it back to you.
Exactly. It is the, you know, it is in many ways the future of medicine to allow the most efficient care that can be provided individualized and in a way that, you know, can utilize resources in the best way possible. So it's exciting that the VA is at the forefront of this type of a project and this type of research. And it's I think it's exciting for the veterans to have the opportunity to participate and be part of this.
I hadn't heard about it before, so that's why I wanted to ask you. That's going to be next Tuesday at VA Butler Healthcare. Anything else happening in the near-term future, Director Cord?
Well, yes. We have Saturday, June 3rd, we're going to host another claims clinic. We try to do this once a year. What we do is we work with the Veterans Benefits Administration out of Pittsburgh. They're the regional office that serves most of Western Pennsylvania, so they serve our veterans who have issues with regard to benefits, primarily with regard to compensation and pension benefits that a veteran might be entitled to. They come up here once a year and actually send up several of their staff and host an in-person clinic so that veterans who may be having issues with a claim that they've already filed, with an appeal to a claim, questions about starting a claim, it's a nice opportunity for them to get some one-on-one FaceTime with a claims representative as opposed to doing that over the phone. Mm-hmm. So they'll come up for the day, send their claims representatives. So I would, you know, encourage veterans. We're going to do that June 3rd in the auditorium. It'll start at 9:00 in the morning, and they'll be there for most of the day. If you have any concerns about a current claim or any questions about a potential claim, bring in your paperwork that you might have and come on up. We probably had 40 or 50 veterans last year that we helped with the VBA. And the VBA regional director will come up, and she and I will actually co-host the town hall meeting that day as well, too. So anything they want to ask us, we'll be there to talk about.
Do you need to make an advance reservation or appointment for this?
You do not. You can just walk in that day, and we ran it as first come, first served last year. We will get to everybody that shows up, so that's not a problem. If you get there that day, staff will stay there and make sure that your questions get answered. But the feedback we got from the veterans in doing this over the past several years is it's just been very helpful to be able to sit down with somebody, put the paperwork out on the table, kind of go through things and see where it stands or what might need to be done differently or what forms might need to be filed, as opposed to trying to do that over the phone.
I can, my family has had personal experience with that in a very, very positive way, getting one-to-one, getting somebody really going to bat for you.
It helps. Like I said, it's the VBA regional office has always been very helpful to our veterans. In fact, we usually have somebody up there at least once a week helping in the facility to answer questions. But this is a nice opportunity to for some veterans who may not have a chance for that one-on-one interaction. And the claims process at times can be very daunting, and it can take a little bit of time, and sometimes I know that's frustrating for the veterans, and the feedback we've got on this is it's just been overwhelmingly positive to have that, and we're very appreciative that VBA does this. They send their staff up on a Saturday after a long work week, and I got to tell you, they're great people who are just eager to help the veterans and try to get whatever claims, questions, or issues they have resolved.
Is there a charge for this?
No charge. Nope. And like I said, we will also be conducting a town hall meeting. I'll be updating on the HCC, answering other questions about the facility, and the VBA regional director, she'll be there as well, too, and she can answer any questions that are going on in the world of claims and benefits.
You know, a question just occurred to me, you may not, obviously it's not your call, your decision, maybe you don't know yet. Is it officially going to be the A.B. Abraham Healthcare Center? They don't know yet, or is that still going through all the various hoops in D.C.?
No, it's gone through. Legislation was passed. It was signed by President Trump, and it officially will be the A.B. Abraham Healthcare Center. Mm-hmm. And so that's all set to go. The signage is ready to go on that.
I'm just going to ask you, because I'm looking at the architectural yes. rendering here from several years ago, and obviously it didn't say A.B. Abraham on the front of the building at that time. But well, that's good. I remember it going through the House, because it was Congressman Kelly, I believe, Congressman Mike Kelly of Butler, who initially sponsored it. And I knew it was headed toward the Senate, but I hadn't heard what happened at that.
Well, I think the last session it hadn't hit the Senate before the recess. Mm-hmm. So I think it ended up starting back over this term. Congressman Kelly has been great. He's championed this, and you know, when he has shared the background with his colleagues in both the House and Senate on AB, there was no question that everybody was going to be in favor of this. President signed off on it, so we're all set to go. And there's AB's widow and some family members are going to be at the ribbon cutting event as well, too. So we're very excited to have his family there.
I know that AB had died before you became director, but you were here in a previous capacity some years ago. Did you ever get to meet AB?
Every day I would see him. I worked back in 2006. I was here for 2 years as the chief of human resources at the facility. And AB was the greeter at the main entrance every single day. He logged more hours than I did. So, I had the opportunity to meet him, just a very special individual who, like I said, he put in as many hours as any employee did there, and it was a real blessing to work with him and have him there. So we're very excited about the naming, and like I said, we're very excited that his family's going to be able to be part of this.
Well, somebody said, we were talking about this a month or so ago, and somebody said, nice gesture. And I said, well, you know, it's really more than a gesture. When you think, World War II is a long time ago now. World War II in Europe ended just a couple of weeks ago. May of 1945 was the VE Day, the end of the war in Europe. It was, May, June, July. It was 3 months later when the Japanese surrendered. That was in August of that. It was 1945. And that's, you know, that's AB's big story, survivor of the Bataan Death March and all that stuff. And that, you know, for younger generations, I mean, that's like reading about Valley Forge, you know, and Gettysburg. I mean, that's ancient history to them.
Oh, it is. And it's, if anything, you know, hopefully this naming and his family being part of this and just the whole discussion of this will spark some interest.
Yeah, or somebody might see the name and say, well, you know, what's that all about? Who was he?
Exactly. You know. And that's a good thing, because I think that what a wonderful way to learn about history and to recognize that, you know, history's not just in the books. It's actually the people who grew up in this area and who are from Butler and who are from Western Pennsylvania that made that history. And, mm-hmm. and it's those tangible, real people that sometimes I think that, you know, as the years pass, we tend to forget that it was those individuals that led us to where we are today. So hopefully that will spark some interest in younger people to maybe do a little research and find out a little bit more about AB.
Yeah. AB himself wrote a couple of books, and trying to think of the nationally known author, Sykes is his last name, and I can't think of his first name now, but he wrote a book about the Death March, Bataan Death March, and AMI is mentioned in there. That's another place you could look. And exactly. That was a bestseller just a couple of years ago. Memorial Day weekend is coming up.
Yes, it is.
I mentioned that to somebody at work early this morning. I said, well, you know, 1 week from today, next Friday, we'll be getting ready for the holiday. And they kind of had this blank look. And I said, check your calendar. Next weekend is a long Memorial Day holiday weekend.
It's coming upon us quickly, isn't it?
Special weekend for anybody involved with the Veterans Administration.
It really is, and we will be holding a ceremony on Monday, on Memorial Day, in our Community Living Center, which is a nice opportunity for us to take a moment and recognize all the veterans those who never made it back from wars, those who made it back and live full lives and are now deceased. And so we, and it's nice for us to do that in our community living center. It's really, we have a lot of residents there who, it's a special opportunity for them to remember a lot of their comrades in arms who didn't make it back from the battles that they saw. So we're looking forward to doing that.
It's, and these are mainly older veterans, right?
Yes, our community living center is predominantly individuals who reside there. It's a nursing home care for the majority of our veterans there. And so this is their home, and it is. It's our older generation, typically veterans, except many of whom, when you sit and talk to them, they lost a lot of friends in the various wars throughout the years. So this is a day for them to remember as well, too.
What's a ballpark figure of the census there?
We have 60 beds in our community living center, and we are typically 100% occupied at all times. There'll be a few times where we might have a little swing of a bed or two, but for the most part, we're at 60-bed capacity all the time.
And that center is fairly new, by the way, in terms of building construction.
That is. Probably about 5 years old now at this point, and we'll remain on our campus.
And stay there, yeah.
Not going anywhere. And then we have our domiciliary program, which is our residential rehabilitation treatment programming, and we've got 56 beds in that program that will also stay on the existing campus when we move.
So it'll be actually be kind of a split campus for VA Butler Healthcare once the new facility opens up in a few months.
Exactly. We'll have all of our outpatient care is going to be in the new healthcare center, and everything that we do that's residential is going to remain on the existing campus, which is nice. You know, the campus that we're on now is beautiful for a residential setting. It's really a lovely campus for the veterans in the community living center and our domiciliary residents. And the new healthcare center is, you know, ideally constructed and built for outpatient care. So really, we've now got the best of both worlds between the two campuses.
And the new campus is beautiful as well. Will there be at some point after you're open and you're everything is running smoothly, that there'll be a public open house or something like that?
We are going to actually host our annual Welcome Home event the Saturday after we open. Every year we do a Welcome Home event to welcome home any veterans from recent wars and conflicts, and try to encourage veterans who are not using our services to use our services and enroll. But it's also an event that's open to all veterans, just to come to the event and find out about our services. So we decided that since we've got the new facility, that first Saturday after we're open, we're going to host the Welcome Home event there. The building will be open that Saturday, and we'll be conducting tours, have an open house. So it's going to be a great opportunity for anybody who wants to see, not just veterans, anybody in the community that wants to come to our open house event, please, they're welcome to come and take a look at our new facility.
And this is a hospital, folks. So obviously, you're not going to be able to go everywhere. It's going to be in use. It's going to for a week, but you get a chance to see certainly part of the facility.
Absolutely,
some of the public areas. Just to get inside and look around would be great.
They'll get to see. You know, we'll be able to do some pretty extensive touring of the facility, so people get an opportunity to see what our exam rooms are like and where we provide our primary care and where our pharmacy and physical therapy and labs and everything else are located. So it's we're excited. The timing of this couldn't have worked out better as far as being able to host the Welcome Home event there on the property right after we opened up.
Well, Mother Nature provided one of the final shakedown tests earlier this month. We had all those downpours and gusty winds and storms. Roof didn't leak, I guess, huh?
Roof didn't leak. Building's nice and secure and dry. And no, it's having been over there many times throughout the construction, I have to say the men and women who worked on the project, from Mascaro as the general contractor all the way down through all the subs, just really dedicated individuals. When you would go over there and I'd walk through the facility and I'd watch the work that was being done, these are very highly skilled craftspeople, and it was real pleasurable to see them putting this building together. And I'm very confident that we have a great facility to work out of in the future.
I've been yapping a lot here, and I know you had a couple of things you wanted. Have we covered all the bases here? We have some other stuff to talk about.
We covered all the bases.
Okay, good. I was afraid I would. So sometimes we Irish people, we tend to get going, you know, and it's hard to shut us up sometimes.
So I got Irish on my mother's side, so it's good.
Director David Cord, he's the top administrator, the director of VA Butler Healthcare, visiting with us, and good to talk with him. We'll welcome you back next time, Director.
Thanks. Yeah. Pleasure to be here again, Dave.
Okay, we'll take a break, and we're going to be talking about dentistry coming up on the next portion of the program, specifically a program under which some individuals who meet qualifications can get some free dental care. It's tomorrow, I believe. Yeah. And horses. Also, we have a wide variety of things to discuss today. It's Preakness weekend, and we're going to be talking about horses with a local horse owner and a trainer. His name is Bill Mercury. He'll be with us a little bit later on the program as well. So we'll take a break right now. Back with more in a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Oh, wait a minute. Can we still wait a sec? I forgot to mention the Monday program, and I need to do this because it's a book talk day. Book talk is early this month. It's because of the way the calendar fell. Ordinarily, it would be a little later in May. But this works out quite well because the following Monday is Memorial Day, so we would probably have had to move it anyway. And we have an interesting book to discuss. There'll be visitors from Mars Area Public Library. They chose H is for Hawk. It's a memoir by Helen MacDonald, the British woman, and it's a fascinating story. She decided, after the sudden and unexpected death of her father, she was going to train a goshawk, which, as I understand from reading the book now, is one of the most dangerous hawks in the world. And it's the story of her doing this. So, you know, when I first started this is very strange. It's a fascinating story. Fascinating. We'll talk about it on Monday on the program. And also on the Monday program, Denny Bakker will be joining us, president of Butler Ambulance Service. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary this month, 50 years of serving the community. So we'll talk about that on Monday, too. Okay, now the break. Back in a couple of minutes with more It's Your Turn here on WISR. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
There was never anyone in my family who had breast cancer, so I didn't see any reason why I would get it now.
The imaging showed that Joanne had bilateral breast cancer.
I was really worried, but I could tell that Dr. Maloof and his team really cared.
Led by Dr. Tony Maloof, Butler Health System's highly skilled surgical team got to work.
Bilateral mastectomy is as complicated as breast cancer surgery can be. With our experienced pathologists and advancement in imaging, we can make a precise diagnosis.
Once I chose the surgery, they were able to schedule it right away. It was a miracle when I came out of surgery and I didn't need either chemo or radiation. The attention and compassion that I received from Dr. Maloof and his team was truly remarkable.
Visit RemarkableBHS.org to learn more about our surgery services. Butler Health System. Caring hands. Remarkable minds.
We're going to shift gears a little bit here for at least a few moments on the program today. And, you know, we were talking earlier this week, one of our open talk days, about how long the United States has been fighting in the Middle East. And it's been a long, long time. I'm not talking about all the way back to the Persian Gulf War, although you could go back there if you wanted to. was pretty much an uninterrupted string. But that was Norman Schwarzkopf, you know, Storm and Norman. That was back around 1990, 91. I'm talking about just recently in Afghanistan. We've now been in Afghanistan for 16 years. It's the longest, by far, the longest war in the history of the United States. And we're still there, and we may be sending thousands of more troops there in the not-too-distant future. That's been suggested in Washington. So, yeah, it is kind of a sobering thing. And we were talking on the program about, you know, how long should we stay? Why are we still there? And so on and so forth. And I remembered that earlier on the program, and this is a couple of years back now, I had interviewed Michael Korda about, and one of the things we talked about was the, not specifically Afghanistan, but the history of Western nations getting involved in the Middle East. And he specifically had been researching the story of T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, as he was known. You may not have read much about Lawrence of Arabia, perhaps. If you're of a certain age, you saw the film, Lawrence of Arabia, David Lean classic. So I thought it might give us some insight into our, you know, sad, still prolonged presence in the Middle East, still fighting there, to get a little bit of historical background from Michael Korda and his biography of Lawrence of Arabia. Welcome, listeners. If you're joining us a few minutes late on It's Your Turn today, Dave Malarkey is my name. Our guest joins us by telephone. He is author Michael Korda. We want to talk about his biography of Lawrence of Arabia, entitled Hero. It was a New York Times bestseller in hardback. It's now available in trade paperback. First of all, Mr. Korda, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is a name that I dare say 99% of our listeners will have heard of, Lawrence of Arabia. There might not be a whole lot of detail beyond the name recognition, however, even perhaps for those who have read a book about him or seen the film, the Peter O'Toole film. It is astonishing, after reading your book, sir, how relevant his life is to us today and our current situation in the Middle East. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is totally amazing, yes. It's one of the things, not the only one, but one of the things that drove me to write in Hero, a biography of Lawrence, is that he invented, to begin with, a form of guerrilla warfare, which is being waged against us now in Afghanistan and was waged against us in Iraq. He was the man who inspired Mao Zedong, Ho Chi Minh, and Fidel Castro to the kind of wars which they fought. And yet, it's as if nobody has put the two pieces together and asked how it is that somebody could invent a form of war as special as this without our having gone back to read and understand how he did it, or indeed how we could fight back against it. Lawrence was, in that sense, as in many others, a genius. I mean, he wrote probably the best known and acclaimed of big books about war in the English language, The Seven Pillars of Wisdom. He invented modern guerrilla warfare and the use of explosives as terrorist devices as early as 1917. And he was, I would guess, probably the most famous person in the English-speaking world in 1919 and 1921. So he's a huge subject and a fascinating person.
T.E. Lawrence was... he started out in the... he was an intelligence officer in the British military in Egypt, right, in 1917?
Yes, yes. But one who... and I think that this is one of the most important points that I make in here. He was somebody who trained himself from earliest childhood towards being a hero in the classical sense of Agamemnon or Ajax or Achilles, and who rigorously, carefully, he stepped into the role of military leader and hero without a single pause or hesitation. He was already trained for that role, even though people looking at him would not ever have thought that he could be that. He was under 120 pounds. He was 5'5" tall, fair-skinned, blue-eyed, blonde. The notion that he would become a leader of the Arab revolt and a major figure in the war against the Turkish Empire in the desert would have seemed very unlikely to everybody except to Lawrence himself.
That was something I did not know until I read your book, that he was, a very short man. He was only 5'5" tall. The last person that you would cast as a hero or a larger-than-life figure.
Well, of course, one should bear in mind that Napoleon was only 5'5" tall.
Yes.
Height is not necessarily a factor. But still, looking at Lawrence, nobody ever concluded that this was somebody who was going to be a major heroic figure of the 20th century. And yet, it wasn't accidental. He was so self-trained for that role that he was ready for it when it came along.
When he disappeared into the desert in 1917, did he do so with the full knowledge agreement of the British military? I mean, he wasn't going AWOL or anything, was he?
No, he wasn't exactly going AWOL. He went to Jeddah, which is the seaport of Mecca, with a friend on a diplomatic mission, and decided then and there, since nobody knew where the Arab army was or what it was doing, to ride into the desert and find out. It was not necessarily authorized. He wasn't exactly going AWOL, but on the other hand, it wasn't a direct mission either. And by doing so, he made himself at first the liaison between the Arab army and the British, and the person who was able to contact the British and get them ammunition, small arms, gold, and explosives, and then gradually transformed himself into a leader. And I begin the book, in fact, with Lawrence's taking of Aqaba in 1917, which was the victory that made him overnight world famous. It's an extraordinary life. And here, I am a great admirer of David Lean's Lawrence of Arabia. I knew David Lean, and I love the film. But the fact of the matter is that, wonderful as the film is, it's only about 2 years in Lawrence's life. There's a whole pro story before that, and there's a whole lot of story after that. And both of those things need to be told, I think, and understood. The childhood of Lawrence is the fascinating prologue to the man himself. You know, I think you can't just take the 2 years in which Lawrence turned himself into a hero and changed the entire Middle East in ways that are still affecting us today without understanding where he came from and why he could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just to take a second and talk a little bit afterwards, Lawrence was at the peace talks in Paris, I believe, after World War One.
Exactly.
His struggle, of course, was doomed in his attempt to get the Arabs what he thought they had been promised and deserved for rising up in revolt against the Ottoman Empire. And much of what we face in the Middle East today and in Afghanistan has its roots in Lawrence's doomed struggle. He was, however, instrumental, I believe, in the creation of Iraq and Jordan as independent nations. Is that not correct, sir?
Yes, yes. Lawrence was very much one of the creators of Jordan, which I think was one of his successes, and also a creator of Iraq, which we may not now count as one of his successes.
Yes, yes.
At one time it looked like a success, but we're not so certain now. He would have created and tried to create very much a Palestine, which was jointly governed by the Arabs and the Zionists with equal power, and came very close to doing it. And it's one of the haunting realities is that Lawrence in his 20s came up with an equitable and workable solution for Palestine, that the Allies absolutely refused to back in 1919. First of all, because the British wanted Palestine for themselves as a buffer for the Suez Canal, and because the French wanted to have Syria and Lebanon as part of their colonial empire, and the Americans did not want to take responsibility or to guarantee any of the Middle Eastern settlements. So what Lawrence created in 1918 never came about, never happened. And we are still trying to recapture that today. I mean, all these years later,
yes,
we are still looking for the solution, which actually was in hand and signed in 1918. So you have to see Lawrence not just a military genius, but also a diplomatic genius and a literary genius, a rare combination of, to have all of these things in one man and to have them all of them happen to him in his 20s.
So you said that David Lean's iconic film is pretty accurate in terms of what he covered. There's just much more to the story of T.E. Lawrence than what appears in David Lean's film.
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, the film is wonderful, and although it's not a biopic, it's not an absolutely accurate representation of Lawrence, and isn't supposed to be. It's still fairly close to the facts, and gives some sense of Lawrence's achievements and his courage and his daring and his potential. But it leaves out. It ends when he leaves the Middle East. There's still a substantial amount of his life to be lived. His role at the Paris Peace Conference in 1919 is of enormous importance. And most of the problems that we are facing today in the Middle East, in fact, come from not having paid attention to what Lawrence advised us to do in 1918 and 1919.
I think that's the most astonishing thing of your book. I mean, it was fascinating to learn about the life of T.E. Lawrence, but to realize that we had the answer right there almost 100 years ago in our hands, and it slipped away. One other thing I have to mention, sir, I was absolutely blown away. I was looking through your book, and there's a portrait of T.E. Lawrence by Augustus John, and I was dumbstruck by the resemblance. I actually thought first it was a picture of Peter O'Toole when he played Lawrence of Arabia. The resemblance is astonishing, don't you think?
It is astonishing. Of course, bear in mind that Peter O'Toole is 6'2" and Lawrence of Arabia was 5'5". But height apart, it is startling. It is also, if you look at that picture, and I'm very glad that Hero has a wonderful color picture section as well as a black and white section. But if you look at that color picture, a painting of Lawrence, the self-confidence and the presence and the magnetic personality of Lawrence comes through very strongly in that painting.
Yes, wonderful.
It's an amazing face.
Color pictures, color maps, a wonderful book, and listeners, you'll be astonished at how relevant the life of this man, this legend, is today with what's happening in the Middle East. The name of the book, actually, it's been around. It was a New York Times bestseller in hardback. It's now available in paperback. The title is Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. We've been privileged to talk with the author, Michael Korda. Thank you, sir, for your time. Nice to meet you today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program, Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street, downtown Butler. Were you able to deal with the heat this week all of a sudden? Felt pretty good, actually, didn't it? I mean, after the first half of May was so chilly and damp and, well, it got hot all of a sudden, and a lot of folks were looking around saying, where's my sandals? I think I could use some sandals. Well, let me tell you that at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, they've got SAS sandals. Now, you've heard of SAS shoes, America's favorite comfort shoes. And they really are comfortable, the most comfortable shoes I've ever seen. But they also make sandals, and they're just as comfortable. And they come in a variety of styles and colors. It's not just, you know, they're all the same. Check them out. Try a pair on. Boy, you'll see what I mean. The entire stock of men's and women's SAS sandals and shoes, too, available at Miller's Shoes, where you also find hundreds of pairs of athletic shoes. They've got all your famous brands there. Nike, New Balance, Saucony, Rockport, Keds, Skechers, Easy Spirit, Asics, ProPet. Got them all, one roof. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Going on 125 years. That's tradition, boy. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main, downtown. We're going to be talking about horses soon on the program, coming up in about 10 minutes, as a matter of fact. We'll be chatting with Bill Bercuri, horse owner and a trainer. It is Preakness weekend, you know. That's coming up right after this guest. Listeners, we're chatting on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. And if you're just joining us, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is author Victoria Aveyard, and she joins us to talk about the highly anticipated follow-up to her number one New York Times best-selling novel, Red Queen. First of all, Victoria, hi. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The follow-up novel to Red Queen is called The Glass Sword. I think the first thing we should tell our listeners, could this novel stand alone, or must readers have read the first one initially?
I think it's best to have read the first one, definitely. This is quite a linear series, and one picks up right where the other one leaves off. So I think you might be a little lost if you're not reading the first one.
Well, then let's talk a little bit about the first one so that we can kind of set the stage. What's the story behind your debut instant seller?
Basically, it's a story about a world divided into two classes of people. There's regular humans like you and me, and then there's superhumans who have special abilities and powers ranging from super strength to mind control. And the story specifically follows a 17-year-old girl named Mare who is raised by a normal family sort of in poverty and believes that she's kind of a regular person, but then discovers that she can control electricity. And because of this, she's sort of forced to masquerade as one of the elite and gets to see sort of the other side of the world and how unjust it is. And she sort of falls in with people who are within the nobility, but also sort of a growing rebellion group. So she gets kind of torn in two. And then the second book is her attempting to sort of bring down and destroy sort of the divided world that she's from.
The way that she knows she is one of the common folk, I understand, is by the color of her blood. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, the superhumans have silver blood, whereas regular people have red blood. And for whatever reason, she has red blood, but also has superpowers. So she not only has to hide that she grew up like a different person, but she has to literally hide her color.
Listeners, a little bit about our guest, writer Victoria Aveyard. As we mentioned, the number one New York Times bestselling author of Red Queen. Her follow-up is Glass Sword. Victoria was born and raised in Massachusetts. East Longmeadow, Massachusetts, as a matter of fact, but she moved to the West Coast to get her Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in screenwriting at Southern Cal. So you were born on the East Coast. You went to undergraduate school on the West Coast. Where do you live now, Victoria?
A little bit of both, because I'm still working in screenwriting as well, so I go back and forth. I have good frequent flyer miles.
So where did you get the inspiration for this sci-fi series?
I was about to graduate college, and I was sort of in a panic, and I had only written screenplays up to that point. I never thought I could finish a novel, and I decided I really wanted to try writing one. And sort of the first instance of Red Queen that I had is I had this image of a girl who's about to be executed, but instead of dying, she kills her executioner with lightning, and I thought, that's a book I'd like to read and a story I would like to experience, so maybe I'll pursue it. And I had a manager for my screenwriting career, and I ended up pitching this idea and saying I wanted to write this as a young adult novel. And they told me, run with this. This is your project. So I ended up moving home from Los Angeles. I moved to Massachusetts again, moved in with my parents, and spent sort of the next 6 months writing this book, and luckily it found a home.
Did you, obviously you've done some screenwriting, you're interested in movies. Did you watch film even as a kid? Do you have fond memories of certain characters in movies that you saw when you were very young?
Oh, yes. I'm from a movie family. I saw a lot of movies when I was way too young to see them. I think I saw Jurassic Park when I was about 3. But one of the movie characters who's always been my favorite and has always stuck with me is sort of Princess Leia. She's one of my favorites. I'm a big Star Wars fan, and I've always been a fan of great female characters, and she's one of the best.
Now, what about your book being adapted for a film? Is that going to happen, or is that already in the works?
Yeah, Universal Pictures has the film option, and we have a fantastic screenwriter. She's written a great draft. Her name's Jennifer Hutcheson. She worked on Breaking Bad. And Elizabeth Banks has signed on to direct, so we've got a lot of wheels in motion, and now it's just hoping that the success of the first book continues into the second book, and we start really building our audience. It's been really exciting.
Do you think that the success of the Hunger Games series will perhaps give you a little bit of a built-in audience? Of course, if your books weren't really good, it wouldn't make any difference. But it seems to me like this would be, you know, right up the alley of all the Hunger Games fans.
Yeah, it's definitely for fans of that. It's a sort of dystopian fantasy, so we sort of straddle the line there. But yeah, Hunger Games has helped pretty much everyone in young adult. The rising tide really raises all boats, so we're all indebted to Suzanne Collins.
So you're a big Star Wars fan, even from the time when you were a little kid. I'm sure you've seen the latest film then. What do you think of, The Force Awakens something like that?
Yes, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. Rey is another great character, and I'm really excited that, you know, young kids who were my age when I first saw Star Wars, young girls are going to get to go and see a girl front and center in these movies. It's really fantastic.
So if you had your wish and money or times and scheduling were no problem, who would you love to see cast in the film version
to play
Mare Barrow?
I get that question so much, and I have honestly no idea. I'm not a casting director, and that's so not my decision. So I have no clue.
Now, this is book 2, right? There is more to come. Am I correct on that, Victoria?
Yes. I signed for 3 books, and I'm writing the 3rd book right now, and I realized I wasn't going to get to the ending I wanted to get to in the span of this one book. So it's been expanded to 4 books.
Do you still have time for your screenwriting and your television writing projects, or are the novels kind of taking up most of your available time these days?
Right now, my priority, since I'm drafting, is just writing through the 3rd book. But when I was doing edits on the 1st, I was able to write and sell a screenplay. So I find the time when I need to find the time, and I'm getting the itch, so I'm hoping to find the time again.
Obviously, you've had great success with the debut novel, Red Queen, the number 1 New York Times bestseller. What about internationally? Has it reached the international market yet, your 2 books?
Yes. The first book has been translated or is being translated into over 35 different countries. So we're pretty international. I'm going to the Philippines next month for my 2nd international tour. I went to Germany before, and it's been really bizarre and surreal to realize that it's not just a local thing. It's worldwide. There are people who want to meet me and like this book all across the world. It's really, really fantastic.
So tell me honestly, in your wildest dreams, did you ever imagine that you'd be going to Europe and to the Philippines to promote your book and to meet fans?
Nope, never. Even when I was first writing it and daydreaming, you know, oh, I need this, I need to sell this book and, you know, move out of my parents' house, I didn't even think of anything like this. So it just exceeded all my wildest expectations.
Listeners, if you're looking, if you've read the first book in the series, Red Queen, or if you haven't, by the way, I'm assuming that's still in print and widely available, Victoria, the first one, Red Queen.
Oh, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's everywhere books are sold.
And the latest, the brand new one, is Glass Sword, the follow-up to the bestseller Red Queen by Victoria Aveyard, who's been our pleasure to chat with here for the last few minutes here on It's Your Turn. I know your schedule is very, very busy helping to promote the book. Victoria, thanks for giving us a few minutes. It was nice to meet you. It was nice to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Thank you.
We are scheduled to talk coming up in the next couple of minutes about horses with Bill Mercury, who is a horse owner and a trainer from our area, up in the Slippery Rock area, I believe. So we'll be chatting with him. And I'm not very knowledgeable about horses, to be honest with you, but this is a good time to talk about them. Preakness weekend. Of course, that's thoroughbred racing. And Mr. Mercury is involved in harness racing. He's with the Meadows Standard Bred Owners Association. So I want to talk a little bit about his background, about horses, about racing, about the Meadows. Yeah, that's all coming up here on the It's Your Turn program. And coming up, as a matter of fact, in just a couple of minutes, we're scheduled to chat with Mr. Mercury. We'll be right back.
If you're a dog person, you know how much a dog means in your life. You know how your dog gives you unconditional love and affection and joy. You also know that a dog can be so comforting at just the right time when you need to be comforted. That's why Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler has O'Shea on their care team. O'Shea is there to provide the comfort and companionship that really helps, but she'll only be there at your request. Come in and meet O'Shea, and you'll see why so many folks want her at a funeral. She creates a calming atmosphere. And while you're here, ask about all of our other unique services, our competitive costs, our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
I was just 49 when I started getting mail from AARP. AARP? Shoot, I was just getting started in life. Then I hit my 60s and retirement was on my mind. The big question was, did I prepare? What about healthcare? Are my finances in order? Not just for my wife and me, but for the kids and grandkids. I got the answers I needed from attorney Michael Pater, specializing in elder law, long-term care, Medicaid, and wills and estate planning, is attorney Michael Pater in the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center. Phone 287-7724.
Welcome back, folks. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR today. Dave Malarkey is my name, and we're going to be talking about horses on the next segment of the program. Our guest joins us by telephone. He is horse owner and a trainer, Bill Mercury. Bill, nice to meet you. Boy, it's great to have you with us for a few minutes on the program here today.
I'm glad to be with you. How are you doing today?
Oh, just great. I'll tell you what, on a day like this, tail end of spring, pleasant temperatures, sunshine, gentle breeze, what more could a guy want, huh?
Especially if you have five or six horses. This is just perfect.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and I know you do. Bill Mercury, folks, is with the Meadows Standard Bred Owners Association. But you and your wife have a horse farm in the Slippery Rock area, right, Bill?
Yeah, we do. We have a farm, a track, a small track that we exercise our horses on. We race standard bred horses, which are the ones that are in the sulkies or buggies, as people call them.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because, and I'm not tremendously knowledgeable about horses and horse racing either. I know a little bit, but some of our listeners perhaps are less knowledgeable as well. Now, this is Preakness weekend. There's a big race tomorrow down at Baltimore at Pimlico. But that's thoroughbred racing, right, Bill?
That's correct. Although at the Meadows, we have we start our racing early tomorrow morning at 11:30, and then we have the Preakness on the big screen out on the track, and we have quite a party going on down at the Meadows tomorrow.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yep. People have a lot of fun if they show up. It's pretty interesting. It's a fun time.
So that's thoroughbreds. Standard bred is what you're talking about with the sulkies or the buggies. Now, there's two different kinds there, right? And I, again, correct me if I'm wrong. There's trotters and pacers. Is that right?
You're right. You're exactly right.
Well, and, I don't know what the difference is, though, Bill.
The trotters, the legs on either side go the same as your arm and leg would. They go the opposite.
Okay.
And on the pacers, the two legs on one side go in the same direction at the same time.
Hmm. Well, my goodness, I never knew the difference. Are horses, this may sound like a stupid question, are they born this way, or do you train them to be a trotter or a pacer? How does that happen?
Well, they're born with an inclination to trot or pace.
Mm-hmm.
And some horses, they're all standard breeds, but a horse from a trotting family is more inclined to trot, although once in a while you'll get one that paces. And the same thing with one from a pacing family. Sometimes you'll get one that trots.
Do they ever break stride in competition?
They do.
And is that...
That's a trainer's responsibility to teach them not to.
Uh-huh. Is that a disqualification if that happens?
It's not actually a disqualification, but you have to lose ground, and you have to take the horse back and put him on stride, and then you can go back and enter the race.
Wow. Well, that solves one big mystery for me that I've always wondered about. I never knew that. You mentioned when we were kind of dreaming a little bit there at the beginning of our conversation, what a gorgeous day, especially if you have five horses. You, in fact, own five horses, Bill?
We have five horses racing, that's correct.
Okay.
And we have them all at our farm in Slippery Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I have two pacers and three trotters.
Now, if you're going to race at the Meadows, obviously you have to transport them down there, right?
Right. We transport them back down there for races in a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they race, and they all race once a week, and they all seem to race on different days.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on our way to the Meadows 3-4 times a week, for sure.
You get a good workout on I-79 then, I'm guessing, right?
We do. We do. We know every sign, we know every pothole, and we know an awful lot of the people that drive back and forth.
Well, actually, that's pretty convenient because Slippery Rock is right handy to 79, and the Meadows is right off 79, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, it takes us about an hour and 15 minutes to get down. If I'm going down in a car, I went down this morning in a car,
mm-hmm.
and I made it in less than an hour. So if your fans want to get down and... bet the horses, it'll take them less than an hour from Buffalo to get down.
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because people might not realize, you know, that's about the same time as it takes to get to Pittsburgh. But when you get on I-79, it's a straight shot. And, you know, Yeah, you never
it's
have to stop.
Shot.
There's no stoplights or anything like that. You just buzz right down there. So how did you...
We race 4 days a week down there.
Mm-hmm.
We start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And we usually have 12 or 13 races, and it's a good time. And you know what? You can make some money betting these horses.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Is all the racing at the Meadows now during the daytime?
Once a month, we'll have what we call a family fun night. And that'll be like on a Friday night. We'll start at 6 o'clock, give people who are working a chance to come down and see the horses.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we race at 1:05 every day. We're actually Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday.
Is that a change from earlier years, Bill? Because I can remember when the Meadows raced at night.
Yeah, we used to always race at night, but it has changed, and we race when we get the most bets, and we get the most bets in, during the afternoon, so that's when we race.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not...
People bet from all over the country, so actually all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, again, my limited knowledge of racing, but I know in many European countries, Ireland in particular, which I'm pretty familiar with, they race during the day all the time.
They do. They do.
It's on TV during the day, too. In most pubs.
So I take it you've been to Ireland more than once.
Quite a few times, actually, yeah. So how did you get started in this business, Bill Mercury? Because horse racing, as I understand it, and horse ownership, for that matter, is many times a generational thing. You know, your father, or your grandfather, whatever, were involved, and that's how you got involved. Is that the case for you?
No, it isn't, as a matter of fact. fact, I met a girl here in Butler, and she was a pretty little thing, and I'm looking for a place to take her other than a bar where I can sit down and impress her.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I'd take her to the Meadows, and we'd have dinner at the clubhouse, and there'd be some kind of action besides me that she could watch. And at the same time, I'd get to plead my case. And I could see that she loved the horses, and that was it. We became involved in horses, and we've been married for many, many years.
Oh, what a great story. What a great story. I also went on a date with a girl at the Meadows a long, long time ago. My story didn't end quite as well as yours did, though. That's a true story.
The next time you want to go on a date down in the Meadows, they have a great steakhouse down there. Probably the best steakhouse in western Pennsylvania, Bisteca.
Well, you've got me thinking now, because I haven't been to the Meadows in a while, and I would venture to say there's probably a lot of people listening to us right now who have never been there or not been there for a while.
It's a world-class steakhouse. Mm-hmm. Bisteca is the name.
So is racing, because you train horses too, how do you get time to train if you're racing that many days a week? It must be a very busy schedule.
We start pretty early. We usually up at 6 o'clock and feed the horses, eat our breakfast, and we're back out working the horses at 7.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fellow working for me, Mike McDowell, and he works for me full time. So if my wife and I go down to the Meadows, then Mike stays home and finishes up the work. Or if Mike and I go to the Meadows, my wife stays home and finishes the work. But we get the work done, and we get it done every day, and they don't get shortchanged, I'll tell you that.
Can you train right on your horse farm in the Slippery Rock area?
No, my track is only a quarter of a mile, so I can only go the slow miles. And then the fast miles, I get down to the Butler Fairgrounds, where we have a half-mile track.
I see.
And did you know that there are almost 100 standard-bred horses at the Butler Fairgrounds being trained?
I had no
every
idea.
Day?
Wow, no idea, no. Wow.
Yeah, 100 of them. And it's a very, very nice facility. It's a very nice track. And most of the people down there training have been in it for generations.
Mm-hmm. Do they still have harness racing during the fair?
They do. They have harness racing. I believe it's the Friday, the first Friday and the first Saturday of the fair. And of course, the fair is the 4th of July week.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I would go to the Meadows on any particular day, I would probably find some Butler County horses there racing, wouldn't I?
Absolutely. No question. There's always 5 or 6 Butler County horses racing.
We're talking, for listeners who are joining us a little bit late, and a nice conversation with Bill Berkery. He's a horse owner and a trainer from the Slippery Rock area, has a horse farm there. He's also with the Meadows Standard Bred Owners Association. And in case you didn't know it, the Preakness tomorrow is in Baltimore. Pimlico, I think, is the name of the track. Is that right, Pimlico?
That's it.
Yeah.
You got it.
But you don't have to go to Baltimore to watch it. You go to the Meadows. They're going to have lots of racing down there themselves, in-person racing, and the Preakness is not until, I don't know, what, 6:30 in the evening, something like that?
Yeah, we start racing at 11:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. and we'll have live racing till the late afternoon, and then after that, they'll have the Pimlico races on the screens all over the casino and on the track, and they'll have programs and betting available, and specials on whatever the drink is at Pimlico. I'm not sure which one that is. Is that the mint julep? Or?
I think that was the Derby, but I'm not a real expert on that.
Me neither. And if I was, I wouldn't admit it.
Let me take a quick break.
But I'm an expert on the drinking in Ireland. But
Let me take a quick break here. We'll continue our conversation about horses with Bill Berkery here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. One of our sponsors on the program today, our good friends at Schnurr's Greenhouse, just off Herman Road. Oh, boy, are they ever humming this time of year. Humming more than any other time, I think, because they are just loaded. They are exploding with annuals and hanging baskets. Such glorious color, such wonderful aromas when you stop there. and vegetable plants too, because, you know, most of them are delicate. Some you can put in early, but we're getting to that time now, after all, only a week till Memorial Day, that a lot of folks are putting in vegetables. So if you're looking for those fresh, healthy, you'll find them at Schnoor's. Off Herman Road, look for Schnoor Road near the RC Men's Club. They're Butler's longtime trusted greenhouse, Schnoor's. How long? Well, they're family owned and operated since 1889. That's not 1989, that's 1889. Yes, over 125 years, Schnoor's has been the place to grow. Any flower plant you can imagine, they've got it. Schnoor's Greenhouse, off Herman Road. Look for Schnoor Road by the RC Men's Club. Schnoor's.
There are two distinct periods in music history, the big band era and doo-wop. Put them together and you've got yourself one swinging night of entertainment. The 16-piece Pittsburgh doo-wop big band with vocal accompaniment will feature tunes from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Doors open at 6, showtime 7:30. Saturday, May 20th on the stage of Butler Intermediate School. Tickets are only $20 and can be picked up at Mays Music Store, Natilly's North, or Tanglewood. Online, PennTheaterButler.com. Proceeds benefit Penn Theater Performance Company.
And that concert, by the way, that big doo-wop big band concert tomorrow night. Yeah, tomorrow night, Saturday, at Butler Intermediate High. We're talking on the It's Your Turn program here on a Friday on WISR with Bill Berkery. He's a horse owner and trainer in the Slippery Rock area, and he's with the Meadows Standard Bred Owners Association. So you told us a little bit about how you met your wife and you actually went on a date to the Meadows. Were you already in the horse business at that time, Bill, or did that come later?
No, neither one of us had any horses up until that time.
I see.
And like I said, I wanted to impress her. You know how guys are when their hormones are working. So I ended up buying a horse. And I ended up getting a driver's license and a trainer's license, and I used to drive all of my own horses. I don't anymore. But it's been a wonderful thing for us. It's something we get up and do together every single day, mm-hmm. and it never gets old. And I think it's been a blessing for our relationship. These horses are just fantastic, fantastic animals. These horses all enjoy racing. They just can't wait to get out on the track and do their work. And when race time, they get all keyed up, and they just love to race, and we love to race them.
So that's what they're bred to do, huh?
That's what they're bred to do, absolutely.
Talk a little bit about...
And when they win, they know it. I mean, there's no question. When they win, they're shaking their head, and they're pretty excited about it. I mean, it's just almost a natural competition for them.
I've heard that there's an incredible relationship between horses and their owner or their trainer. In some cases, an almost mystifying relationship, a communication thing. Have you found that?
I have, and I found it more so with some horses than others. Mm-hmm. We had a favorite horse that we retired last year, and... we sent it to somebody to break to ride, and then one of the organizations found the horse a home in Texas. Mm-hmm. And 2 weekends ago, my wife told me we're going on vacation, and for a 4-day vacation, and I found out that we were going to visit this horse in Texas. So, yes, you do get quite a relationship with them.
Do you race?
And we race these horses. We don't race these horses. They don't just race for a year or 18 months and you're done with them. I mean, our average horse, my wife and I race, we race for 6 or 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And so it's a long-term relationship. It's not just a relationship.
I didn't realize
that. I have a horse
in
my barn that I'm racing tomorrow at the Meadows, and he's 9 years old, and he's a beautiful red stallion, and he's made over $1 million. So
I had no idea that horses could be competitive for that many years.
Standard the one control. That we went and visited in Texas was 13 years old when we got rid of him.
Wow.
And his last start, he won in the top class at the Meadows. And so if you take good care of them, they can be competitive for a long time.
In baseball, you know, you have your pitching rotation, pitchers at that class, you know, world-class pitchers. They can't pitch every day. They need 4 or 5 days rest. That's why they have a rotation. Would it be something similar to that for a horse, Bill?
Basically, we race the horses. Usually, we allow a week in between races. Once in a while, you'll race one in 6 days.
Okay.
But usually, we allow a week. However, we race all year round at the Meadows. You can go down there on a blizzardy day, and we'll probably still be racing. However, even though they race 50 weeks a year, most of the horses probably will get 33, 34, or 35 starts.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get vacations off in between. All of my horses just came off 4 week vacations, and they enjoy them just as much as people do, and they also enjoy going back to work when they're over.
So that gives their muscles a chance to recoup and re-energize, huh?
Yeah, the muscles and their minds.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So, forgot about that.
But if you overuse a pitcher, the pitcher's career is very short. And so we try very, very hard not to overuse them. And if you let a pitcher pitch when he's injured, he's liable to have a shortened career.
Yeah.
And we watch our horses very, very carefully. We watch them for any kind of signs of anything bothering them, either physical or mental. Physical being both medical and joints and tendons and ligaments and things.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep right up on top of them. If you take care of them, you watch for the beginnings of problems, they have long happy careers.
I can remember someone once told me when I was a kid, well, I don't know, 12, 13 years old or something like that.
12 or 13 years ago.
Yeah, it's not all that long ago. But I strained a muscle or something playing baseball, and my dad gave me the old Absorbin Junior treatment, and one of my classmates said, that's for horses, and I said, well, what are you talking about? And it turns out, I guess he was right. I mean, that's kind of the human version of it, but that started out as a horse liniment.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Wow.
And I'll tell you what, every time I open a bottle, it brings back all kinds of memories. Although we don't use as much Absorbin as we used to, it's a little bit harsh, and the horses have evolved to the point where we don't use very many harsh things on them. They can sometimes you find out you're just as well rubbing a leg with a little bit of alcohol instead of a strong ligament.
Is Absorbin
liniment.
Absorbin Senior, does it have the same distinctive smell as Absorbin Junior?
It sure does. It feels the same, too. I don't know that there's any difference.
I've often thought it was the smell that was, you were psychologically cured by the smell of the stuff.
It's pretty strong stuff. So
yeah.
There's no question about it.
Do you need a special, if you've got racing horses, standard bitch, do they need a special ration of feed? Do you have to develop that or adjust that throughout their careers?
Well, there are different feeds, and some of our horses, get fat really fast, and some of our horses have trouble keeping weight. So people will use different feeds with higher or lower fat and protein depending upon the individual horse.
Mm-hmm.
They also are inclined to get muscle cramps if they get too many carbohydrates, although some of them can take carbohydrates real fine and you don't have to worry about it. So we're using different feeds for them.
So that's what you were talking about, where the trainer has to be very, watch them very carefully for any changes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We actually... we use a tape measure to do it, but we weigh our horses at least twice a month, believe it or not. I mean, it's funny because we have boards out there, and it has the name of the horse and what his weight was in, the last 3 months, and usually 6 measurements. And we kind of watch them really careful to watch if they're losing any weight or if they're gaining excessive weight. We want to know about it. We want to know about it right away because it's really important you take care of them.
Yeah. Interesting. Folks, we need one more quick break here, and then we'll be back and wrap up our conversation. I've learned a lot here talking already with Bill Mercury. Quick break. We'll check midday lottery numbers, and then we'll be back to wrap up here with Bill on the It's Your Turn program on WISR. Back right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 18-1-8. The pick 3, 372. The pick 4, 8701. The pick 5, 03356. The wild ball for each of those is 4. The treasure hunt, 3, 4, 16, 28, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $80,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Does your pharmacy tell you your wait time for a prescription will take a half an hour or longer, or maybe won't even be ready until the next day? Don't think this is your only option. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, we have made it a priority to take care of our customers' needs first because your time is precious. Most wait times are under 10 minutes. So don't you think it's time to make a switch to Institute Hill Pharmacy, located at 937 East Jefferson Street, or find us on Facebook, Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Time begins to run short here as we talk about horses, learn a lot about horses, with our guest on It's Your Turn today, Bill Mercury, horse owner and a trainer from the Slippery Rock area. I wanted to review for folks who weren't with us at the beginning of our conversation, Bill. Tomorrow is a big day not only in Baltimore for Preakness Day, but it's a big day at the Meadows because you can see live racing and also watch the Preakness down at the Meadows.
Exactly, and we have some two-man jog carts, and some people will get a chance to take a ride around the track with a horse. And we have some giveaways, and we have some activities for the kids. Kids are welcome at the track portion of the Meadows, although they can't go in the casino. We have facilities for kids, and the kids seem to love the horses. I mean, they're the kids are hanging on the rail watching the horses more than the adults are. And so it'll be a good time for anybody that wants to come down tomorrow. And try your skills at betting. I mean, betting horses is one of the few gambling endeavors that the how much money you make is determined by your skill, not by the click of a computer. And we have actually people that make a living betting standard bred horses, believe it or not.
Well, that's true when you think about it. You know, the click of a slot machine or the rat-a-tat of a roulette wheel, it's all luck. No skill involved there.
Yeah. And betting the horses is skill.
Yeah, that's fun too. Yeah,
it is. It is. Harness racing is fun. Period. We just love it.
The Meadows has special family days, too, if tomorrow doesn't work for you one way or another, with the special activities on Preakness Day. Well, Bill, this is fascinating. I'm going to invite you back with us a little bit later. I've got lots more to learn about standard bred horses and horses in general. So we'll welcome you back soon, and we'll talk again.
Good. And tell people anytime they want it, they can go out to the fairgrounds in the mornings. There's always somebody out there exercising their horses and willing to answer their questions, and that's how people end up becoming owners.
Well, another good idea. Bill Mercury joining us. Thanks, Bill. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike. Nice talking with you.
Yeah, sure. Bye-bye. Bill Mercury, horse owner and trainer. Up at Slippery Rock, a horse farm up there. Coming up on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, it's a book talk day. A little early in the month for book talk, you might say. Well, it's a quirk in the calendar. The first day of May was a Monday, May 1st. So that means there are five Mondays in May, and our book talk is always on the fourth Monday. So it is kind of a week early. that's good because the following Monday is Memorial Day, so we would have had to have moved it anyway. Good book, H is for Hawk, a memoir, powerful memoir, actually. Sad in places, but educational. It's about a woman, an English woman who trained a hawk. Very dangerous, a hawk, a gauche hawk. Her name is Helen McDonald. We'll talk about